Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Elledge, and this is Skylines, the City Metric podcast. In fact, this is one of those rare outside broadcast ones we do, because I'm currently sitting in the bar of the Royal Station Hotel in Newcastle, or Newcastle, as I should probably keep getting told I should call it, where the barman has been very kind in turning the music off in here, so I can actually record this thing. And I'm sat here with a local journalist who's going to tell me all about his fine city. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Chris Stokel-Walker. I'm a freelancer for Sunday Times, The Economist, Wired, occasionally New Statesman, have once written for you, John. And I'm based in Newcastle, up north.
So that's my first question is, like, as with so many other industries, the media is incredibly centralised in London, and people who aren't in London tend to be in Salford. What's it like? Like, what was it that made you decide to base yourself up here?
I did not want to live my life in a 750 quid a month hovel in Zone 4. I basically, I have in the past sort of looked at staff jobs in London, but they basically don't appeal to me. The idea of having to spend half your salary on accommodation and then another quarter on the tube, when frankly you can do your job nowadays from anywhere thanks to Skype, thanks to emails, things like that, makes it far easier for me. And also I can kind of, I don't know, make a deal of it. I can kind of be the rare person based in the north who can actually do journalism up here, based here.
And it is, it's worth saying, so it is bloody gorgeous up here. Yeah. Like I came here for a couple of days, largely because it's the largest British city I haven't been to, and I've been meaning to for a while, and I've heard good things. But the centre is absolutely stunning. It's like, just architecturally, in terms of just like the infrastructure, it's one of the great cities of the world, and nobody ever bloody talks about that. No one ever says you've got to go on a weekend to Newcastle because it's a great, you know, just it's a great place for a city break. Do that. And I kind of think it's like, you guys are keeping it a secret.
Well, we're not. We're shouting about it. But the fact is that we're like a 3-hour train journey away from all the people that know about it. And this is kind of the big thing that I have difficulty with, is that I will try and pitch stories either about hard news or about sort of soft features, highlighting some of the stuff that's really good up north. But when you're talking to a London-based editor and they say, well, you know, most of our readership is in the south, it really has to be extraordinary to make it in the sort of paper or the website. It's kind of a best-kept secret because we are so remote. And I don't know whether or not it's necessarily our fault that we're not shouting about it, or whether or not it's sometimes that the inherent biases come about.
And it is worth saying, I think it is remote in a way. So most of the big northern cities are in that kind of M62 corridor. We've got Liverpool, Manchester, Leeds, Sheffield, Hull, and various others.
They're all great in Manchester, aren't they?
But Manchester is kind of in the middle of that.
Yeah.
They're all within like an hour or 30 miles of Manchester, the first problem. Hull, not so much, but the rest are. And that's kind of a thing. And then the northeast is sort of something else, another 100 miles away, but sometimes gets bundled in as if there is a thing called the north.
Yeah, well, this is the issue. I mean, you know, we have fights in the northeast about Newcastle and Sunderland and which one's the best. So the fact that you think that we're going to go along with Manchester and gobby Yorkshire people in terms of, you know, agglomerating ourselves into one northern powerhouse is a bit ridiculous, which is kind of part of my reporting. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of the northern powerhouse. I think that it's pretty obvious from some of the stuff that I've done that I'm not. But I think that there is a sort of role for the northeast to stand alone. And I think that you have to look at facts. You know, Manchester is basically as remote as London is to Newcastle. So, you know, it's 2.5 hours on the train to the first one, 3 hours to the second. Like, you can't have a lot of coverage from here because it is so remote. Even like the, you know, you look at the Guardian, who do amazing stuff in the north, and but all of their stuff is, their office, their northern outpost is based in Manchester.
Helen Pitt, the northern editor, is a Mancunian.
Yeah, and Helen does fantastic stuff, and you've got Josh Halliday and people like that who, you know, do their very best to get over here, but ultimately it's a hard slog for them. It's it's not something that you can just hop over to Newcastle from Manchester for in a way you think you might be able to.
And it's, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's also quite a small population. Like, the whole northeast region is like a couple of million.
Yeah, 2.5, yeah.
Which is like the smallest region or nation of the UK by population.
Amongst the poorest,
yeah. And that's spread over a wide area. And yeah, as you say, it's among the poorest. But this is something that's really struck me with the last couple of days wandering around Newcastle and Tyneside and Wearside more generally. It's like, actually, the poverty is not as visible as I expected. Like, the city centre in Newcastle feels like it's thriving. And there's lots of other bits that do feel like, it feels like there is more affluence here than I'd expected. I mean, is that just me being, you know, a southern racist against the north?
A little bit. It's not all coal and whippets and flat caps. I mean, yeah, we do have a lot of stuff. We've got a thriving tech sector in Newcastle. We make a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, you look at Nissan in Sunderland, though, whether or not they're going to be there for long.
This is a Brexit-free podcast.
Yeah, let's not.
I can't.
Just, we can't. We're recording it on the day.
Yeah.
So we can't really not. But and you know, you have services and things like that. Sage, for instance, the IT company, one of, you know, in the FTSE 250 or 100, I can't remember which. They're based up here. They're headquartered here. They were founded here. They're kind of like a big success story. But it's often in, the affluence is often in things that either aren't sexy enough for sort of mainstream consumption or isn't, you know, world beating. It's kind of, we get by. There is, you know, there are pockets of, you know, poverty in here. You know, you kind of went almost to the fringe of it in terms of Biker. But if you go further into the east end of Newcastle, then you do get into some rough bits. And I say that as the son of a teacher who taught for 35 years in Walker, which is one of the worst bits, essentially, in Newcastle. You know, the fact that we had the UN coming up here and looking at our food banks last week was kind of indicative of that. But yeah, you're right. Like, the city itself, Newcastle, Gateshead, you know, even parts of like South Shields, which you went to, they do have a lot of interesting projects going on, and the poverty isn't as bad as people think. And even if it is slightly poorer than you might expect, there are people doing interesting things up here, which ought to be celebrated.
I also got the distinct impression that it is, the cost of living up here is significantly lower, and I think it's probably a reflection of that there are sort of, you know, little independent cafes and bars all over the place. So the sort, you know, the sort, if they popped up in Hackney, we'd get a double page in the Evening Standard, you know, and they're just kind of scattered all over the landscape up here. Like, it looks like, I hate to say it, but much of it looks like a sort of gentrified London suburb. That's the thing that surprised me.
That's the thing. The way that I describe it is that Newcastle is kind of like London, but on a 10-year delay, essentially, and Manchester on a 5-year delay. So, you know, you walked past on your little tour of Newcastle yesterday. I think you walked past our version of the Box Park, which is Stack Newcastle. So we have two of them now. We've got one on the gates of Quayside. We've got one right in the heart of the city. And they're kind of...
So I should explain for anyone who doesn't know what Box Park or Stack Newcastle is. It's basically like little independent shops and shipping containers, yeah. Right? It's stacked on top of each other.
Cheap and easy way of getting businesses. And
they tend to put them on like development sites in London while the developers are waiting for something to happen. So then actually get building. They tend to sort of use it as a way of monetizing the land in the meantime, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But they've been in London for, 10 years or more, right? And we just got two in the last 6 months, which is kind of indicative of that weird delay in terms of filtering things back. Like, matcha lattes and avocado on toast. You can almost think of it like that. Yeah, we kind of had the hipster revolution a little bit late as well. Mm. So, we do have affluence. I think that it's just that we are on a slight delay in comparison to everything else. It takes time for inverted commas culture to filter out to the regions and up north, as you might want to put it.
So one thing I wanted to ask about is the relationship with Scotland. Like, obviously, Edinburgh's another 100 miles away, but something that really struck me about just the physicality of Newcastle is it kind of reminds me of Edinburgh and Glasgow more than it does the other northern cities. Is that a fair comment, do you think?
Yeah, I mean,
just in the colour of the stone. I mean, like, it's all sandstone up here, right?
Yeah, and it's beautiful. I mean, we have, like, Granger Town, which is essentially the big market and Grey Street and things like that were all developed by this very famous architect who made these incredible things. And the sort of the wide open boulevards are a bit like Glasgow. I always thought that Glasgow was a little bit like San Francisco-y type things, like West Coast American cities. So it does owe a bit to that. I think that in terms of temperament and leaning to politics, we are still tethered more to London and elsewhere than we are to Edinburgh. I think you have to go pretty far north up into Northumberland to actually get any sort of Scotland connection for that. It seems to me like you have Glasgow and Edinburgh and Newcastle, which are pretty unique in terms of their architecture. I mean, I used to do a lot of train journeys east to west from Newcastle to Manchester, and I noticed a massive change in the skyline from Newcastle to Leeds, because suddenly at Leeds you see these skyscrapers appearing, you see more modern buildings in and around the train station. Then you go to Manchester and you've got things like the Hilton Hotel, which are huge examples of that. Whereas in Newcastle, you don't really have that. You don't see that development, I don't know.
No, it's quite the landscape is largely Victorian and Georgian still. Like, there's a little bit over the river in Gateshead, but Newcastle City Centre, I haven't noticed anything. Let's talk about Gateshead very briefly. Before we started recording, we were chatting about the relationship between the various bits of the what used to be the old Tyne and Wear metropolitan county. Gateshead is immediately across the River Tyne, across the various amazing bridges. The bridges alone make it worth the trip, to be honest. But it's effectively like the South Bank equivalent in that, like, there's a lot of the cultural offering is there. And it kind of feels like you're still in the Newcastle Central Business District, but it's a separate borough. It's a separate, very separate identity, and the devolution deal that's coming through. Gateshead kind of pulled out of that one because he didn't want to play. Is that?
Yeah, that's my reading of it. So it was, we have to rewind 2 years for that, I think. So it was going to be a whole northeast devolution deal. I think it was something like £700 million of investment was promised by George Osborne. And, the quid pro quo for that was you have a northeast mayor. And various people put their names forward for that, and then at the last minute, Gateshead and a couple of other south of Tyne authorities kind of said, we're not playing anymore. Mm. And it's interesting because, you said that, all of the cultural offerings, or most of them, particularly the modern ones, the Sage, Baltic, things like the Angel of the North, they are south of the river, so they are in Gateshead. And some people in Gateshead, not me, I am from Gateshead, but you know, my dad, for instance, can get a little bit snippy about Newcastle claiming things like Baltic and Sage and the Angel of the North as its own. And that kind of, I think, fed through to the devolution deal, in that Gateshead kind of said, well, we feel a bit like a junior partner in this deal, and we're not eager to get involved either with Newcastle, nor are we keen to get involved with London. Because the one thing you have to remember about Northeast politics is that we are quite parochial and we are quite tribal as well. So very Labour dominated all around here. And sometimes I think that the Labour MPs and the councillors can take a sort of oppositional stance that is just, well, screw the Tories in any way possible. So, like, they won't, you know, they could be offered a really good thing, but because it is from London, because it is politics, party politics before pragmatism, they'll sometimes just swat away things. I think that kind of is what might happen in a devolution.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It feels like, I'm sure they have their reasons, but it feels like a slightly eccentric choice, in that it's also worth saying, for, you know, the kind of people who listen to this podcast will be interested in the fact that there is also a Tynemere Metro.
There is.
Like, it has a small underground section, but it's and it's a very, very fine metro it is too. But there's a brilliant bit where you go out of Newcastle Central Station, underground, go across, you're suddenly like on a bridge way above anything, and then you go underground again at the other end. But like, Gateshead is one stop down. They're on the same transport system. It's obviously, like, you know, the same metropolitan area, at the very least. Like, the idea of treating it separately when it's a single economic unit, commuter zone, and so on, feels odd to me. But, you know,
it is. But the thing is that you have to bear in mind that since the early 2000s, Newcastle and Gateshead have been partnered together on this odd branding, which is Newcastle Gateshead. There's no space between it. You know, we have a Hilton Hotel on the Gateshead side of the Quayside, which is called Hilton Hotel Newcastle Gateshead. And it's because, you know, Newcastle is kind of the older brother, and so Gateshead can get very snippy about that, particularly when they are putting forward significant amounts of the cultural offerings, often significant amounts of the funding and the legwork involved in that. But the Metro is a really good example, you know. Apart from the fact that everybody, whether they're tourists or locals, will turn and look out the window as they go over the bridge, because it is an incredible view.
It's just astounding.
It is, isn't it?
Like, you're underground, and then suddenly you're not just above ground, you're way above the river.
We make
and
things really well.
Again. It's like, and I know I've already said this, but the bridges are just incredible. Like, I immediately before coming to meet you, I did a slightly sad... Have you seen Our Friends in the North?
Yeah.
Yeah, I should hope so too. But I... because I'm that kind of ponce, I decided to walk across the Tyne Bridge listening to Don't Look Back in Anger, which is what happens in the very last episode of that.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to just walk across the bridge, really, because it's like, from the bridge is the best place to see the other bridges.
Yeah. Well, I walked across the High Level Bridge because I live in Gateshead. Right,
which is a covered bridge. We don't do covered bridges in this country.
Covered bridge.
There's a covered bridge.
There's a covered bridge, although it is severely limited to traffic now. About 10 years ago, they closed it to anything but buses because basically the lower deck is a road bridge, and then above it you have trains, and then the Metro Bridge runs parallel to it. I think it's the Queen Alexandra Bridge. Someone will pick me up on that if it's wrong.
They will, like, within minutes.
Yeah, I know, it'd be terrible. But, we build stuff here. Mm. We used to build stuff here really, really well. We still kind of do. You know, even the Millennium Bridge is kind of inspiring. And, you know, to my mind, I think Glasgow nicked the design for their bridge as well. So, yeah, they're really beautiful. But the Metro, you know, it's difficult because theoretically, under the North of Tyne devolution deal, the mayor of that, I think, should have jurisdiction over transport, including the Metro.
But half of it's going to be outside his remit. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know what happens there. I mean, it's the Metro is kind
also,
of...
Also, I just slipped in saying he. That's terrible of me. I apologise.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But, well, that's another thing that I'm not really qualified to talk about, I don't think. But in terms of who would be the mayor, there's not that many options. We don't have inspirational local politicians like Andy Burnham who can kind of fly the flag on a national level. I think Nick Forbes is probably the only...
He's the Newcastle council leader.
Nick Forbes is...
write-ups.
Yeah, he's been profiled all over the place. And he's very canny and very smart. He's doing a very good job in very difficult circumstances with council cuts. But he's also, I think, you need to have a sort of public profile that can inspire people, and Nick Forbes is the closest that you get to that because he's very canny in terms of playing the media as well. I think
I'd like to move the conversation on or back, depending on how you're looking at it, and just talk a little bit more about transport, because that's what people are here for, let's be honest. So you've got the Metro system with two lines, which it's quite loopy, but
you can get to the coast in half an hour though.
And very nice coast it is too. Like, there's coast in this place, isn't
there?
Yeah. Like, but I'm told that there are large chunks of the area that aren't served by the Metro, and I'm told the buses aren't great.
Yeah, well, to be honest, the Metro's not great either. I mean, the Metro was under the control of DB Regio, which is a Deutsche Bahn subsidiary, I think, and it's... I can't remember whether it's confirmed or not, but they were certainly discussing about a year ago taking back control of the running of the Metro, because basically it was the rolling stock is sort of 40 years old and about 20 years beyond its usable date, so they're kind of running knackered old trains there. They'll bring in new ones, but it's not great, and likewise the buses, they're regular, but they're not reliable. They're also really expensive. So part of the reason why I walked from Gateshead over to Newcastle here was that a single bus journey, which takes 15 minutes, travels maybe a mile and a half, is like £2.30, which is a lot of money to, if you're trying to incentivize people to use public transport, I think that's probably not the best way to go about it. But buses are a bit ropey. Tyne Wear Metro had a extension which took it to Sunderland, which you went on, I think, for a brief moment, which is good, It's two different cities, but also, you go out east to the coast, you don't really go that far west.
And if you look at the map of the Metro, it stops at St James's, which is St James's Park, where the football team plays. Which is very slightly west of the city centre, and it doesn't go any further. And as I understand it, they can't extend it any further because of the building that's happened since.
Yeah.
If they were to try and do a metro in the west of Newcastle, it would basically have to be a tram or some such.
Yeah. And we haven't even thought about the fact that there is Middlesbrough further south, that there is Northumberland further north. These things would benefit from being better connected. I have a friend who works in Hexham, which is a market town about half an hour's drive west of Newcastle. And for him to get He doesn't live in Newcastle anymore. He sometimes comes and stays with me when he's working. And for him to get from my flat in Gateshead, which is very close to Newcastle, to Hexham in time for 9 o'clock, he has to leave at like 7 a.m. He has to get up 7 a.m., walk out my door, walk to Newcastle Central train station, get on one of those beloved paces that we love talking about in the north, and moving over to Hexham. And they're not regular, is the thing. This is the difficulty.
It's crazy. I mean, just to wrap up, what do you think what do you need, like, both the city and the wider region? What would your asks be if you were, like, going with a wish list to an enthusiastic government? What does it need that it doesn't have at the moment?
An unlimited pot of money, obviously.
Well, I mean, we all want that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, actually, Brexit's gonna deliver that, I think. So.
Oh, good. Oh, phew, okay.
I seem to remember that from a bus at some point.
Yeah.
But
we'll have that.
Yeah.
No, I think more respect would be nice, and a better voice. So, late 90s, New Labour, Tony Blair, Prime Minister, is a North East MP. Nick Brown... Nick Brown still is, but yeah. Obviously Nick Brown, his power... I know he is Chief Whip, but his power in a Blairite Labour government is slightly different to his power in a Corbynite Labour government. So we need more voices in the North, and the difficulty is that we have some middling to strong voices in the current political class, but we don't really have that dynamic leader who is able to shout really loudly about what is good about this region, because there is a lot good about it. Your time here kind of demonstrates that. It's a place full of surprises that when you go to and think, oh, actually, this is a pretty decent place. The stereotypes that I have, they're wrong about this. So we need someone who will shout about it, I think.
I mean, I would genuinely recommend, if you've got a free weekend and you fancy going somewhere in Britain, then you could do a lot worse than this. There's a lot to see up there. This is bloody gorgeous. So, and there's a seaside as well. So why not? Go on, go to Newcastle.
I'll make you welcome, promise.
So that was a couple of hours ago. I'm now on a train where I've been for some time. I was hoping to get some reading done while on here, but I failed miserably at that because Brexit is happening, the government is falling. Either of those things might not be true by the time you hear this, but it's been a very exciting evening. So I've been spending the time staring at Twitter, watching the door, really, is what I've been doing instead. Anyway, fabulous time in Newcastle. I reiterate my suggestion that if you have some free time and you can get a decent train ticket, then why not? You should go. It genuinely is. There are very few cities I've been as enthused about as this one in this country. Glasgow is another one. You should just get to Glasgow at your earliest opportunity, which we haven't done an episode on. We should do that. Which brings me to the reason I've kind of broken in here. Skylines is going to go fortnightly. We've been weekly for just over a year now, and it's been fantastic. It means we've been able to respond to the news more quickly. It means I've managed to get so many guests on. But as you'll know, if you're a regular listener or someone who reads my tweets, I'm switching up to a slightly new role at the New Statesman, where I'm going to be day-to-day editing of the website, and there just isn't going to be time for me to interview someone and produce a podcast every week. So the plan, as I understand it, is we're going to go from weekly down to fortnightly, but we are going to get an external producer. So when you do get an episode, it will sound slightly less crappy than the ones that I've put together myself. Just warning you of that early on. We're not going anywhere. We're still going to do Skylines, and I hope you'll stay with us, because other than Glasgow, there's a lot of other great cities out there that we haven't even talked about. So we should really get on that. Anyway, I am about 15 minutes now from the King's Cross, I think. I hope. Not so long ago, we were overtaken by a Thameslink train, which is never a great sign, really, but, you know, nearly home. So looking forward to getting home and getting some sleep and finding out if we still have a Prime Minister. I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Skylines, the
podcast from City Metric, the New Statesman City site. It was presented and produced by me, John Ellidge. If you enjoyed the episode, then please do consider leaving us an iTunes review. It really helps other people to discover the show. And, you know, the more people get listening to the show, the sooner I can achieve my real goal of world domination for the medium of trains. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.